Okay, this is Edward Troy, Liberal Gladiator, and I want to welcome the audience to another KDNK production of A Weight Off Your Shoulders. In my studio this afternoon, I have Steve and Joelle Foshan out of Foshan's Gym, and we're going to go over a few things, and we're going to go ahead and start off right now. So Steve or Joelle, you guys are here together. I want to know what kind of athletic stuff did you get into? Because you're obviously a competitor now, and both of you are obviously in really good shape. So where did you start? What happened? So when did the bug bite you and say, okay, my God, I'm an athletic competitor?
That goes way, way back. At age 14, I built my first weight bench with my best friend. And at 16, truly started training as an athlete and running cross country. And then it just evolved from there. I think in 1987, I went out to California, trained at Miramar, and became a personal trainer at that time. So that was 1987. And I think I was 20 years old, 19 years old, something like that.
Wow. So, God, I have to say, when I was looking at the certifications back then, I said,
There weren't any.
I mean, I started out before ACE and all that stuff. So I was like, oh, what a joke. Who needs a certification? I mean, you're a coach or you're not. You know, the idea of being a personal trainer was like kind of wacko. Well, so what happened? Did you get yourself certified at that time?
I got certified at that time and enrolled at Keene State. It wasn't a fitness kind of thing. It was called fitness management back then. It wasn't a personal training. It was more the business side and the athletic side, the kinesiology side, all rolled into one. There wasn't any kind of, no one was certifying anyone at that point. You know, it was in its infancy. I wish I could remember the name of the gal that founded the organization that I trained at out there, but it's been, you know, God, that was 38 years ago, something like that.
Right. Well, you're younger than I am, so I'm just going to let you know that my fossil bed's deeper than yours. I'm part of the trilobite tribe here, you know. So
a lot of it is that way, you know, and it's still that way. We learn by experience. You know, you try something, if it works for you, great. If it doesn't work for you, you try a different direction. You know, and athletes are that way because every athlete is wired and plumbed a little bit differently. You know, it starts at your brain, what your brain is allowing your muscles to do.
Right. So you're addressing neuromuscular pathways. Mm-hmm. All right. So you, what was your first competition that you got into? You said, man, I'm doing this. This is me. Because there's nobody else that's going to do this but me for me. I'm all in. I'm going for it.
That would be the Berkshire Classic in Southern New Hampshire, 1989. I was at Keene State College, which was primarily a powerlifter's city. I mean, there were, the first 700-pound bench was done there at Keene State College. I was the little skinny guy working out the gym as a trainer, as a cashier, and going to school. I said, I want to do a bodybuilding contest. And they all called me skinny. I said, okay, let's see what happens. And 6 months later, I did my first contest, finished second or third in my very first contest. And it was game on from there and been competing ever since.
And you knew that you were not going to be a cross-country star, cross-country runner anymore.
I didn't like it that much. You know what I mean?
Come on. You want to log some miles. Come on. Tell me. You want to put in about 10 miles right now.
I could. And back in, let's see, in 91, 93, I was literally running Hanging Lake Trail for cardio conditioning.
Okay.
Every Sunday, I would go up and run the hill and try to better my time every week. And that's a great workout. And then I would rollerblade home.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to say that was only, 25 years ago.
Sure was.
Yeah, quarter of a century for some listeners. I mean, they didn't even wake up in a womb yet. Mm-hmm. All right, Joelle.
So me, gosh, my exercise career started when I had kids. I needed an outlet. I had three back-to-back when I was younger and started hitting the gym. And the gym was my outlet. And I didn't even know Stephen way back then. And, you know, that's what I did for a long time as a mom and working out. And then I moved out here to Colorado. And after a long, you know, process of hiking and biking and teaching skiing and, you know, everything you can do here in the outdoors, I met my husband and we opened a gym together. And we both have a love for fitness and training. And, you know, Stephen went from bodybuilding to strongman. And I became a personal trainer and a certified nutritionist. And, you know, we've kind of been building for the last 10 years and then had another baby. So, of course, I have to keep working out hard, try and keep all baby weight off.
You got to run them down, too.
Yeah. So that's when we opened Foshan's. You know, it's been 10 years now. And we're both training hard and, you know, working hard. And then, you know, we jumped into, Stephen really, really wanted to host an event, a strongman event, and couldn't really find the right cause and time. And anyway, it all fell into place this summer with our Crown Mountain Strongman Championship, running able-bodied athletes alongside disabled athletes for the first time. And it was absolutely fantastic.
I think that's absolutely fantastic that you're bringing people in who would, in some cases, be overlooked by, you know, the rest of society as potential athletes. And per our conversation, you know, yesterday, I just think that's fantastic that you are doing that. You're reaching out and, you know, I mean, in some ways, I was thinking, guy, you know, it's not that they're disabled; is they have special abilities that we, because they've had to cope with the issues, they have special abilities that we actually do not have,
right,
that allow them to cope with things that are beyond our scope of experience and comprehension.
Well,
I mean, we understand on paper, but it's not an experience.
Well, if you think about it, when you and I get out of bed every morning, both of our feet hit the floor. We have a distinct advantage over someone who is an amputee. And it really started last March when I went to the Arnold Classic and saw the it's called the disabled, strongest disabled man in America. I watched these guys compete by themselves. And I says, you know, it's not, they don't need to be segregated. We need to put both able-bodied and disabled-bodied athletes together, because one pushes the other and vice versa, because they motivate the dickens out of me, and then we motivate the dickens out of them, because some of the stuff that we can do, we take for granted some of our abilities. And I came back from the Arnold after having dinner with a whole bunch of other guys, able-bodied athletes and disabled-bodied athletes, and I said to Joelle, I says, we figured out what we're doing. We're doing a contest with both athletes side by side in the same venue, and if I can make it so that they can do the same events, we will. And as it turned out, we had three guys with two legs, three guys, so you should have six legs, doing conventional deadlifts on the field. So
it was incredible to see.
When you see something like that, you can't. It gives me goosebumps to think about, because it's so inspiring.
Dude, I'm getting goosebumps now, because it just pisses me off when I hear able-bodied people complaining about some petty crap, for God's sakes. And then these guys get, you know, or girls get up without, you know, without feet or legs or this or that or something, and then they go out and they, you know, they go skiing or they do lifting or they're doing what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, I just have a maybe selective hearing problem that I call deafness towards that kind of stuff. I just honestly don't want to hear it. I really don't. I know as trainers, I don't know if you want to hear it, but you know, I want people who are really enthused and into it, because there's a camaraderie that I've noticed amongst athletes and competitors. And so I want to ask you about that. How was the camaraderie between, you know, the so-called disabled, I'll put that in quotes and unquoted, and then those who are, you know, quote, like us, who are maybe more able?
It was amazing. And what was so cool about it is everyone was equal. No one thought that anyone was better or less able than anyone else. I met a gentleman, Casey Mitchell, in Ohio, and he is the first amputee power lifter in the world. He pulled 600 pounds on one leg plus a prosthesis. He actually out to our event after I met him in Ohio, and we talked to him, we established a rapport. I said, Casey, I want you to come here and see this. He was equally inspired by our guys and our athletes as our athletes and competitors were by him.
That's astonishing off of a 600-pound deadlift off one leg.
Absolutely.
Jeez Louise.
He's amazing.
That's amazing. It is amazing. Astonishing, you know, mind-blowing.
Yep, and he hosted an event Friday night before our event at Crown Mountain on Saturday here in Carbondale. And we welcomed in everybody and anyone just to hear him talk. He was so inspirational. He'd been through so much with his leg being amputated.
He's an Iraqi veteran, mm-hmm. who was hit by an IED, almost lost his arm, came home with both legs. But when his daughter was born, he had been in so much pain and so many surgeries, he opted for them to remove his bum leg, and they salvaged one leg so that he could get fitted for a prosthesis and walk when his daughter started to walk.
He wanted to walk her down. Okay.
He wanted to
wanted to walk with her.
Right.
It brings tears to my eyes, that kind of motivation. But he also has a no-excuse attitude, and he doesn't put up with it from anyone, as neither you or I should. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times we give people a pass.
Yeah, I try to give people passes. But I have to say, I've hardened quite a bit on that lately, because there's so many people that don't want to waste our time and our expertise, and they know they need something, and for some of them, they want to go into that competition, and they want to be a competitor, and they want to be the best they can be, and they are looking for PRs, and they are looking to test their genetic background and their age, so they can say, hey, look, here's where I am. And so if someone were going to go in if you're going to do an intake of someone, what were the kinds of questions would you ask them? And, you know, and they say, well, gee, Steve, I mean, come on, dude, you know, strongest man, dude. I mean, what next? How do I do this? You know?
Well, we have to have realistic expectations, but we also, me personally, I'll filter those people out. After, you know, one session or even just meeting someone, I can tell if they're truly looking for someone to hold their hand and count their reps, or if someone who really wants to make progress. Because if you want to make progress and you're willing to make changes and do whatever's asked of you, I'll be more than willing to help you gain whatever PR or your goal is. But if you're not willing, if I sense that you're not willing to do it all, I'm gonna dump you. Just that simple. I'm not going to waste my time. I have far too many people and athletes that really want to do stuff. That's who I want to work with.
Yep, I got you.
We had
all in there.
We had teenagers compete. We had a huge group of women compete at all ages. We had masters. We had men. We had disabled. We had able. I mean, our teenagers did fantastic. They qualified.
For teen nationals. We had three local kids from Carbondale High School and out compete.
Really?
Great. And they're still training hard. Two of them, a third is actually at Mesa University now. I see him on weekends every now and again, but the two boys from here in Carbondale are still hitting the gym on a regular basis, and they can't wait till next year.
Mm-hmm. All right. So here's a question that maybe some people in the audience might might be able to relate to, you know, what I usually call the locker room kind of talk. What kind of powerlifting numbers are you getting at this point? And, hate to ask, but how old are you, Steve?
52.
All right.
When you say numbers for me or for numbers for other people, because, you know, there's so many different realms and areas, because I'm not a powerlifter. Can I deadlift? You bet. Do I bench press? No.
Okay. I hear that too. Bench press is generally overrated as far as an exercise in the gym and for performance athletics. It is, however, seen as a
benchmark.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Literally,
everyone wants to know.
Literally a benchmark. Yeah. It's almost a goofy thing once someone has been training people for a long time or is a competitive athlete. The bench press is something that's way, again, it's locker room talk, but what kind of a... Joey, you're about to say something.
I was, because that benchmark for the bench press is pretty big in our gym, because every person who has a birthday comes in and they have to do a certain amount of reps for their birthday bench.
And 10 reps for every year. So like, if you're 28, you're doing 200 and just the bar. It's not about weight. It's about mental toughness and how far and how hard are you willing to push? And so many guys come in and think, oh, it's nothing. It's a piece of cake. And then they get about 70 reps in and they
can't stop.
Oh my goodness. There's no rest at the bottom. The only place you can pause at the top. Well, when I turned 49, I did 490 nonstop in 2.5 minutes. Wow. Nobody's even come close to that.
I can't imagine. That would be pretty insane. Yeah, an empty bar, 45-pound bar, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a hell of a lot of reps for people out there, in case you are wondering.
So, yeah. So that, to me, was
that's
a little benchmark.
That's everyone who's in the gym. When it's your birthday, it's you get to either bench press 10 times, you know, the bar, times years, or you get to squat your body weight times 10.
And neither of those would be, for most people, would be easy just walking in a gym.
Correct. Yeah. It's not something you're going to do cold off the street. It's, you know, you want to be a trained athlete, you know, with a little bit of experience under your belt.
All right. Now, I want to go into when you guys, how did you get things organized with the, you know, World's Strongest Man? Did you have a relationship with that, that entity?
Oh, that goes back, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago when I met Brian. I got into Strongman probably 7 years ago. The guy that was training with him happened to be a friend of mine. So that connection, Brian and I, he's 4 times World's Strongest Man now. He and I are dear friends. And I actually go and train with him on Saturdays probably at least 3 times a month. You know, and that's a pretty good privilege.
So Strongman Corp came in because Steven competes with them and, you know, helped back us for this event, for the Crown Mountain Strongman. And then it was a qualifier, became a qualifier for America's Strongest Disabled Man and a qualifier for our able body athletes as well. So Strongman Corp came in, helped us out there. And then we decided to put everything toward Challenge America and benefit the nonprofit that we love so dearly.
Yeah, all right. It all started with Brian, and Brian actually came up through Strongman Corp. You know, so there's a giant, we call it a community, you know what I mean? When we started our gym, we established a community, and we're still growing our community. Now it's probably worldwide with the strongman powerlifting bodybuilders that we have had associations with over the years now. Strongman Corporation is the founding body of strongman competitions in the continental United States and over the world. They do the Arnold Classic in Spain, and I think Poland just happened last week. And with Brian, that whole connection, we needed a sanctioning body for our event. So that's how my connection with Brian and Strongman Corp, I'm kind of jumping all over the place, but they're the sanctioning body. They put on the Strongest Disabled Man in America, which also leads to Strongest Disabled Man in the World, who actually is put on by Magnus for Magnuson, who is also one of the 4 times World's Strongest Man. This is back from the 80s.
He's is that the guy from Iceland?
From Iceland. That is correct.
Because I've seen some of those shows, and I'm like, holy crap, these guys are just titanic.
The size of large
vehicles.
And Magnus is amazing. He started World's Strongest Disabled Man, I want to say 4 years ago. And when I met with him at the Arnold Classic this last year, I talked to him about how I could get started. And then he and a couple other guys, Chris Vaccio, has a lot to do with disabled athletes in Ohio. So we were able to put all these pieces together to put this thing together. But my end goal is I want to become part of World's Strongest Disabled Man, which is put on. I want to be a part of it. You know what I mean? Because I think there's such a huge opportunity, and I want to create more opportunities for these athletes all over the world, because there's not enough for them. You know, and I think you as a competitor, me as a competitor, the more opportunities I have, the more apt I'm going to go out and find one to do. If they're hard to find, you find other options, you know, whether it's drugs or the doggone iPad, and you're going to sit on the couch and be on your iPad. If I can find an event, I'd rather do an event.
Oh my God, yes.
We need to get people moving.
Yeah. Yep. Oh my God.
I know, that's my mother.
Yeah, that's a, you know, just the decay of of the what I would call the vitality of humanity in this country. I mean, I can't address it in other countries that well because I don't live there, but it's a shocking affront to my optics and my aesthetics when I see today, you know, compared to the, you know, I'll put them as memory tapes when I was, say, like 20 years old, 25 years old back in the 1980s. I mean, the optics are so completely different now. It's appalling. I mean, when we think about, like, oh my God, look, fitness level is way down. People are, you know, way fatter. They're not moving. There's no agility, no mobility. When these people become 60, 70 years old, they won't have the agility because they won't have remembered how to be nimble so they don't break their butts on the ice and get broken hips and then die in the next year.
Well, and they won't have muscle mass or the bone density to fight off osteoporosis.
That's another matter.
You know, it's our well-being going forward. You know, today's generations with the lack of football, if you look just, for instance, Carbondale, they don't have a high school football team because they can't field enough kids to play. You know,
holy wow.
It breaks my heart. You know what I mean? I want to get these kids. I want the adults to have more opportunities so that they can mentor these younger kids to come up and want to compete. They want to exercise. They want to do stuff fun and test your mettle. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Now, I want to ask you, because we talked about nutrition just briefly before. Let's go into that just for a few minutes. We've got about 5-6 minutes left here. 5 minutes. So just tell me, like a typical day in a Ocean household, wake up. Okay, the kids are done, you know. All right, so now you're paying attention to, you know, what you're going to be stuffing down the hatch. I got a hatch. I throw all kinds of stuff down it. Okay, and I'm thinking about, okay, how I'm going to tune my food to my workouts. And maybe you guys do the same. And then also food to deal with the aftermath. Go ahead and describe that process.
Here's the funny thing is Joelle's diet is 180 degrees different than mine. And it depends. And it depends on where I am in my training cycle. If I'm getting ready to compete or if I'm in a downtime, because in downtime I eat junk, but I also still eat 6 or 7 meals a day.
Okay.
You know,
kind of body weight are you carrying right now?
Probably about 228 pounds.
All right. That's, yeah.
It's pretty normal for him.
Yeah, that's a lot more than my way, that's for sure.
If I miss 4 or 5 meals, I'll drop to 223.
You know, really?
In New York, my metabolism is such that if I don't feed my machine, it eats itself alive.
Ah, those cross-country, it just seems to keep, it's just going to run you down, man.
I cook him, he's clean, though. I mean, it's chicken and rice, it's burger and rice, or bison and rice.
And fish
it's
and
fish
rice.
And rice. You know, it's pretty basic. There's no sauces, there's no, you know, there's not, sometimes it's pasta, you know, pasta and meat, but real clean.
When it's coming close to contest time, I'll have 3 or 4 eggs for breakfast with cheese in them, and then I'll have oatmeal, and then I'll have a meal at 10 o'clock, and a meal about 12:30, and then again about 3, 4, and then 8 and 9. And I'll usually have a protein shake either in the fridge or at the bedside to drink in the middle of the night. You know, I'll wake up to...
Funny, I do the same thing. I do. I'm a vegan, as you guys probably know, and so I make these green smoothie protein drinks, and I put it by my bedside. It's already chilled, and, you know, if I wake up, knock it down and go back to sleep. So basically, I feel like my body's not going into a catabolic state at any time. But, all right, so Joelle, you are eating something different, though.
Well, I never eat enough. That's what I hear. It's busy. Life is busy, and it's busy for everybody out there. And, you know, people don't realize when you don't eat, it's not good for your body. As you know, the more you feed it, the more it'll burn and work with you. I have a lot of food intolerances that I have discovered in the last year. So for a couple months there, I was like, oh, great, I can't eat anything. What am I going to do now?
Yeah, what kinds? If you're okay discussing, anything specific?
From gluten,
eggs, you can't eat eggs.
I can't eat eggs. I can't do the gluten. I can't do the dairy. You know, so you really
have to be common allergens.
Yep, which is happening with most people. It's our little boy as well. So we're trying to be very creative. Do a lot of ground chicken, a lot of quinoa, couscous, rice, things like that. Breakfast is a tough one, just because, you have to do the gluten-free oats. You have to, I'm as a trainer as well, I try different things before I try them on my clients. I see how they work for me. So from the intermittent fasting to, you know, trying to lose a couple pounds to see how that works, to doubling up my meals, you know, so there's just a lot of different approaches and every body is different. And it seems to work for me as long as I keep feeding it. So.
All right. And so one of the things you brought was like the intermittent fasting, which is now becoming, there's so many things in nutrition that are just seem to be like snake oil and fads. And, you know, they work, you know, I mean, they work for 5 minutes or, you know, and then someone says, wow, look what happened here. And then, you know, down the road, they've got some kind of, you know, serious problems, you know, maybe a month later, a year later, 2 years, 3 years, whatever, they're in trouble.
Or a deficiency.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah.
Frequently it's a deficiency. But yes, that's actually overlooked. The deficiencies are overlooked. And the excess is in terms of maybe too much saturated fat for some people's, you know, bodies and, you know, things of that sort. But one of the things I've noticed is for some people when they're going in and starting to train, they say, well, gee, I've read if I don't eat anything before my workout. Now, we both know that if you keep going down that kind of path, what happens is that the person who is eating, their fitness level is able to go up higher in terms of metrics. Mm-hmm. Now, they may have more fat on them. However, their exercise capacity is up high enough so that when they decide to cut the fat, it goes faster than the other person who remains significantly weaker. Are you guys finding that process to be true or that situation to be true?
100%. But the one thing you have to take into consideration, and many people forget, is that our bodies adapt exponentially to what we're doing. You know, and if you're trying to stay on the same diet, the same schedule all the time, your body adjusts. And the next, you know, 5 weeks later, it doesn't work anymore.
All right. And so we're going to be, show's going to be ending here in a few seconds. And we're going to go ahead and end it. Tune into Pulse of the Planet right now. Thank you guys so much. Super quick, while we're exiting here, how do we contact you?
Foschen's Clubhouse Gym on Facebook.
Okay.
It's probably your best bet.
Yep.
All right.
You can find both of us there. Thanks so much for having us.
Oh, thank you guys for coming in, and thank you for doing what you're doing. Fantastic work you guys are doing. Fantastic.
Thank you.
Thumbs up.
Thank you.